We lived down the street from the University of Arkansas, and my wife called the University of Arkansas and asked for an international student if we could be paired with one and then host them for like Thanksgiving. And so we got a girl named Bindu, and she was a Hindu. And I was like, this is going to be a blast. And so we go pick her up. She spends like a year with us. Like, we go trick-or-treating together for Halloween. We bring her for Easter. She comes over and fixes us curry for Christmas. And every time we're trying to share the gospel with her, but man, it's so difficult because she's like, Todd, my family has been a Hindu for 1,400 years. She's like, also, all religions teach the same basic things. Also, I'm not interested in learning about Christianity because I'm really content with my religion. And she's like, I just sat there and I was like, man, how do you help her to see the uniqueness of Jesus? How do you help her to see the uniqueness of Christianity? It's one thing to think, oh man, all religions teach the same basic things. Every campus I go on, every student I talk to, that's sort of the mantra from pop stars to professors to peers to their parents. All religions teach the same basic truths. But how do we say, man, they don't? They don't. And how do you dispel the lie that they do? Because when you start looking at it, the majority of people, the reason they're not interested in missions, the reason they're not interested in doing anything regarding God's heart for the world is because they don't think the lost are lost. 70% of Christ's followers think there are multiple ways to heaven. And so what I want to do is, I just want to show you how different Christianity is when you start to study other major world religions. And so when you look at like Islam, for example, founder would be Muhammad. The God that he shared about, his name is Allah, but Allah is distant, unknowable, and even in the afterlife, you don't get near Allah. He's even further than you think, even in the afterlife. Mankind's problem wouldn't be sin. That's the problem Christianity deals with. Mankind's problem, they would say, is self-sufficiency. And so even the word, the Arabic word that they named their religion, Islam, is the Arabic word for submit. So they named their religion submit because our problem is self-sufficiency. And so Islam is submit in Arabic. Muslim is the one who submits. And then Muhammad laid out these five pillars of what you have to do in order to gain access to heaven. So you have to pray five times a day. You have to fast 40 days during daylight hours. You have to say the Holy Creed. There is one God, Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. You have to give 2% to the poor. And Muhammad adamantly rejected the Trinity. And so even at the base level, when people say, all religions teach the same basic things, well, no, because Christianity believes in a Trinity. Muhammad rejects the Trinity. Even at the level of who is God, you can't get along. The word surah is Arabic for chapter. O ye people of the book, exceed not the limits in your religion. Say not what is untrue. The Messiah, son of Mary, is only an apostle. Say not Trinity. He rejected the Trinity. He rejected that Jesus was the Son of God. He didn't like that word, and he rejected Jesus as being God. In their ignorance, Christians have falsely ascribed to him sons and daughters. How, when Allah doesn't have a wife, can he have a son? So he got really hung up on the whole Son of God idea that Allah had to have a wife in order to have a baby. So in Islam, there's a ton of similarities, but at the base, they reject the Trinity, they reject the divinity of Christ, and they reject the crucifixion. Christians say, we have slain the Messiah, Jesus, son of Mary, yet they slew him not, they crucified him not, but had only his likeness. And so Muhammad states in the Quran that Jesus was never crucified. And so you can imagine, like, oh, all these religions teach the same basic things. No, we don't. Like, are you joking? Like, we have a Trinity. Islam does not. We believe that Jesus is divine. We believe that he was crucified. And then you have Hinduism. Hinduism, look at how different it is from Islam. Founder, there is no founder. God, unlike Islam where there's one God, God is millions. Mankind's problem is not self-sufficiency, it's karma. The wheel of samsara you are born on. It's got 24 spokes. The evil that you do cements you on the wheel of samsara. The problem you have is karma is keeping you on the wheel of samsara. Every Hindu you meet, the problem is get me off this wheel of suffering. The wheel of suffering is so important in Hinduism. And so how do I get off this wheel of suffering? I devote myself to one of the millions of gods in the hopes that they can throw me off the wheel of samsara back into the ultimate reality. How important is this wheel of samsara or wheel of suffering for Hindus? It's in their flag. It's in their flag. And so think about it. Oh, all religions teach the same basic things. I mean, just comparing two, Hinduism and Islam, it's like, no, they don't. And then you go over to Buddhism. Buddhism, founder, Siddhartha Gautama, who actually was a devout Hindu. The founder of Buddhism was a devout Hindu. Mankind's problem is all life is suffering. It's not self-sufficiency like Hinduism. It's not self-sufficient like Islam. It's not karma like Hinduism. Mankind's problem is all life is suffering. And so that was the mantra that Siddhartha Gautama said. Man, we take each other's stuff and so we suffer. And so how do you overcome suffering? You have to live out these four noble truths, which he spent 80 years of his life giving and sharing. And then at the end of his life, at age 80, someone put a bad piece of meat in his beggar's bowl, and Siddhartha Gautama died of food poisoning. Gods? None. I mean, just three religions, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism. And yet, how they view deity couldn't be further from the truth. The Four Noble Truths that he dictated, all life is suffering, the cause of suffering is one's desire, the way to liberate oneself from suffering is eliminate desires, and then here's an eightfold path for it. The hope of Buddhism is that you'll be spinned off into nothingness. They call it nirvana. Nirvana. When one breaks the cycle of karma, they enter the state of nirvana or extinction. And then you have Confucianism. Hard to even classify Confucius as a religion. Confucius is the world's most boringest founder. He was a teacher until 50, retired, became a police commissioner, had really no known followers, no written book, and died at age 73. But yet if you Google Confucius says, you get like a billion hits. Every fortune cookie bears a saying from Confucius. Mankind's problem is social harmony. We have pushed against social harmony. We need to bring that back. And so that's why in Asia, honoring your parents is huge. Education is huge. Cultivation of self is huge. And so that's why there's a reason Asians are really smart people, is because education is akin to salvation. Hey, can I ask Confucius about heaven? Said someone to one of Confucius' followers. And in the Holy Book of Confucianism, Analects, one can get to hear about Confucius' accomplishments, but one cannot get to hear about his views on human nature or the way to heaven. Again, when you look at Hinduism, karma's my problem. Islam, self-sufficiency. Buddhism, what was Buddhism? Hang on, you guys are not paying attention. All life is suffering, that's the problem. Okay. And you just go, man, the basic tenets. And then you have Christianity. Christianity. Founder Jesus, God triune, Father, Son, and Spirit. Mankind's problem is sin, and salvation is found through faith in the incarnation, crucifixion, and resurrection of Jesus. And so, as you study the world religions, as you read the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita of Hinduism or Buddhism, as you read the holy books of these other analects, or the Confucianism, three things sort of stand out. And sometimes when you grow up Christian, when you're inside the Christian bubble, you don't realize it. You don't realize how unique Christianity is. Two fish, two young fish are swimming in the ocean. An old man fish swims by. "Good morning, boys. How's the water?" the old man fish says. The two boys look at the old man fish and say, "Water's great." The old man fish swims away. A few seconds later, the two boys look at each other and say, "What's water?" Because they're just swimming in it. They just live in it. They don't even realize. And I think for Christians, we don't realize when we say Jesus is unique, just how unique he is. Because we're like, oh, you know, that's just like, what's water? He's the most incredible founder. The most incredible founder. When you look at like Muhammad, Muhammad would say, "I'm just a messenger. There's nothing special about me. I don't know if I'm going to heaven," in chapter 46 of the Quran. "I know not what shall be done with me. I only follow what is revealed. I'm just a warner. I am just a messenger." Muhammad was no more than a messenger, like messengers before him. There was nothing unique about him. Jesus doesn't say, "The Lord says to you." He says, "Thus I say to you. I say to you." Muhammad, "You know, therefore, O prophet, you have to ask forgiveness." So Muhammad sins several times in the Quran where he has to ask Allah for forgiveness. So unique. Jesus, born of a virgin, lived a perfect life, crucified at age 33, rose again. In Confucius, he says, "Hey, I don't think of new stuff. I just transmit what other people are saying." And then you read Colossians chapter 1. You read like 9 verses and ask the question, what does this say about Jesus? By him all things were created in heaven and on earth. I mean, would Muhammad have ever have said this about himself? Would Confucius have ever said this about himself? All things were created for him and through him. I mean, just take Colossians 1, starting 2 more verses up in 14, all the way to verse 22. In Jesus, we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. In Jesus, he is the image of the invisible God. In Jesus, by all things we were created, in heaven or on earth, visible or invisible. Jesus is before all things. In Jesus, all things hold together. I mean, can you imagine another founder of a world religion saying this about himself? Jesus is the head of the church. He is the preeminent. In Jesus, all the fullness of God. I mean, can you imagine Confucius saying this or Buddha saying this? Jesus reconciled all things to himself. You were once alienated, doing evil, but Jesus presents you holy, blameless, without reproach. 9 verses of Colossians, and look at what you get. He is the most incredible founder. And he's the most, we have the most incredible book. Oh my goodness. Think about the book. I thought this was a Bible. It's a hymnal. It looks like a Bible. Look at that. It looks just like a Bible. It's a hymnal. What hymnal has these? Why would a hymnal have these? That's a little over the top, don't you think? I don't know why a hymnal would need those. Oh my goodness, more hymnals. More hymnals. Look at this. We have the most incredible book. The Bible has been translated into 3,900 languages. 3,900 languages. Now, I know it's hard to be blown away by that because, listen, you have to know what second place is. Okay? First place, the Bible, 3,900. And the Bible is like 1,700 pages. Second place, the second most translated book in the world. Are you ready? First place is the Bible, 3,900 languages. The second place, the second place winner. Coming in at 600 languages. The Little Prince, 92 pages. Isn't that wild? We have the most unique book. Look at this. Wherever there is Krishna, this is the holiest book for the Hindu world. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, this is the holiest book for the Hindu world. This is the last line of the whole book. The last line of the holiest book for the Hindu world says, that is my opinion. I was so sad when I read it. I was like, wait, that's it? That's it? And then you look at our last line in our book. It's like, wow, that's not an opinion. I don't know if you are familiar with C.S. Lewis, but September 1st of this last year, I bought every C.S. Lewis book. He wrote 22 books. 14 were fiction. The rest were like really, really good stuff. And I decided to read all 22 in the order that he wrote them. And I have two left. Two. So I'm almost done with my C.S. Lewis world. I took two courses on C.S. Lewis over the last 6 months. There's college courses you can just take, listen, and audit. So I've really began to, I'm kind of like a C.S. Lewis, you know, groupie now. He was the greatest scholar of medieval literature in the 1950s, 40s, and 30s. He was at Cambridge and Oxford. He was over the school of medieval literature. He was the greatest of the great. I mean, he learned Latin at 14, could speak Greek, Hebrew, all that stuff. And at 33, he gets on his brother's motorbike and he starts at home and his brother's riding with him and he shows up at the zoo 30 miles away. And by the time he gets to the zoo, he's a believer. He decides to become a Christ follower. And of course, 22 books later now, one of the greatest Christian thinkers of all time. I have been reading poems and romances, vision literatures, legends and myths all my life. I know what they are like. I know none like the Bible. I mean, the best of the best, who's read the most widespread, probably of anybody in the world. We have the most incredible founder. We have the most incredible book. Just to put it in perspective, many people don't know this, but the Quran was written over a period of 23 years by one man. So the Quran, 23 years by one man. The Bible, 1,500 years, three continents, three languages, 40 authors. Wow. And then we have the most incredible message. Why? Because our God speaks. In Hebrews chapter 1, long ago at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. And he has spoken to us by his Son. And so we have a God who speaks to us, who wants to be known. If I think about this, the holiest verse in all of Israel, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." This is the holiest verse in all of Judaism. And if I went on a 3-year trip with you, and I stayed with you, and I watched you, and I hung out with you, At the end of 3 years, I'm going to know all your issues and sins and the bad habits. At the end of 3 years, Thomas says this about Jesus, following close by him, my Lord and my God. Friends, would Muhammad ever have let someone say this about him? Would Buddha ever have let his followers say this about him? Would Confucius ever have let his followers say this about him? Would any of the gurus of Hinduism ever have let one of his followers say this about him? Yet for Jesus, without hesitation or quiver in his voice, he doesn't rebuke Thomas. Instead, he says, blessed are you, Thomas. You have seen. But think about in the future when people will say, my Lord and my God, about me who haven't seen. There is none like Jesus.